It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Good afternoon. I'm Clay Masters. The Iowa legislature adjourned last week. Despite the fact it's an election year, lawmakers had some big accomplishments. But we want to ask you, listeners, what do you wish got accomplished? Was there an issue not taken up or that fell by the wayside that you were watching? Let us know. Join the conversation. Call 1-866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. We're also on Facebook. And you can email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to talk about what happened with a couple of lawmakers in the first half. In the second half, we'll talk to some legislative reporters. Joining me on the phone is Democratic Senator Joe Bolcom of Iowa City. He's the Senate Majority Whip. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
Thanks, Clay. Good morning.
And Republican Representative Matt Winschittel, the newly elected Speaker pro tem. Representative Winschittel, welcome back.
Thank you, Clay. Good afternoon.
And Senator Bolcom, let's start with you. When you look back on the 2014 legislative session, what will you remember?
Well, I'll remember really an effective group of moms who approached the legislature across a set of issues, including dyslexia and concern about dyslexia in their kids. And we responded, the moms that came forward with the children suffering from epilepsy and the movement for medical cannabis. And then we also had a group of moms that spent some time at the Capitol called the Trauma Mamas, who were concerned about providing quality mental health services to their kids, and we approved funding to address these waiting lists that we have for those families. I think moms had a big impact in addressing a host of concerns to our kids.
So maybe there weren't as many big issues as the 2013 legislative session, but the impact of citizens lobbying lawmakers seemed to have had an effect. Would you say that's a fair assumption?
I think so. I think they were extraordinarily successful across the issue of dyslexia and epilepsy and mental health issues.
Representative Winschittel, same question to you. When you look back on the 2014 legislative session, what will you see?
I'll see that legislators took the message from Iowans that we need to work together and fulfill the needs and provide the services that Iowans deserve. If you look at the dysfunction that's going on in Washington, D.C. right now, and blame lies on both sides of the aisle on that, Iowa sent legislators to Des Moines to overcome that type of dysfunction. And while, yes, we ran a little bit longer than our allotted 100-day session, I believe that we did accomplish those goals. I mean, we've got a lot of commitments that we've fulfilled to Iowans that we've been setting out over the past 4 years. And I'll see, while it may not have been a landmark session as we had in 2013, that the legislature and government worked for the people of Iowa.
Senator Bolcom, you bring up the medical cannabis bill. It was a very limited bill. The governor still hasn't signed it, and already some are saying it doesn't go far enough. Are you concerned that the talk of more legislation could jeopardize this bill's future?
No, I think we need to help these families in a big, strong bipartisan effort in both the Senate and the House, and I fully expect the governor to sign the legislation. It's pretty clear, though, from what we passed, just providing some very basic legal protection to these families that are forced to travel to another state that has a medical cannabis program to actually secure the medicine and then transport that medicine back here. I think people are going to find out pretty quickly we have a lot more work to do, not only to help these families, but there are other folks, other Iowans that approached us with conditions like cancer and MS and HIV, AIDS, and spinal cord injuries, and PTSD that aren't going to have the benefits of cannabis to alleviate their suffering. And so, we're going to be back on this issue, and we made terrific progress this session. It's a very big step, but I think it won't be long before people will see the shortcomings of what we did do.
Representative Winschittel, do you get a sense from your caucus that the House might be willing to consider any future legislation or expand medical cannabis in the future?
Well, that's yet to be determined, Clay. I mean, we're going to have new members come into the caucus after the November election, so I can't speculate on that at this point. What I can tell you, though, is I agree with Senator Bolcom to the extent that we did the right thing for a very focused and narrow group of people on this topic of intractable epilepsy. And we're hopefully this bill is going to give them the opportunity to help their loved ones in a very narrow fashion. On the other hand, when we talk about other folks that are coming in and are going to be asking for an expansion of this, that is going to take a lot more work, and I don't necessarily know that the appetite of Iowans is out there for that at this point.
Senator Bolcom, you think that the appetite is there, though, is what you're alluding to?
Well, I think, you know, 20 other states have programs where people have access to cannabis as medicine. Another 15 states this legislative session are looking at it. I think this is an educational process. It's an incremental process. The folks around the state that would like to see more action on this are going to have to get out there and do the education. You know, the polling in Iowa has about 80% of Iowans in support when a doctor recommends it. We have more work to do, but I think Iowans would like us to continue to be focused on this, especially from the reaction that I've gotten and my colleagues have gotten since we passed this legislation in the last week.
One of the big accomplishments, I mean, at the outset of the session, everybody was saying, well, if we get one thing done, we're going to get a budget passed. Let's talk a little bit about the budget. Representative Winschuttle, how do you think budget talks went and what was accomplished at the end of the session last week?
Well, I think budget talks went as they usually go. There is a lot of compromise, and there's a lot of having to recognize that different legislators have different priorities for different portions of Iowa. But at the end of the day, I think that once again, the session has shown that we have effectively managed the state budget. Once again, we're not spending more money than the state takes in. We're not using one-time money for ongoing expenses. We did not intentionally underfund any one program in order to spend more money this year and create a hole for next year. And we still have a mechanism, and I think we're the only state in the nation that has a permanent mechanism that returns unused tax dollars back to the people of Iowa. And you put that in comparison when 3 years ago we came into session, we had a $900 million deficit, our reserve funds were not full, and now we come back and we're four sessions into this. We got our reserve funds full. We do have a surplus, and overpayment by the taxpayers, what I like to think of it. I think that the budgeting process went very well and is serving the people of Iowa as it should.
What were the priorities that you were glad to see get approved?
Well, some of the different priorities that are out there, we're making an investment in education that's higher than it's ever been before. You look at the governor's home-based Iowa package that was worked on by interest groups and legislators from both sides of the aisle. We've got funding in there for that. We've got funding for our community colleges. It once again will help the Regents Institution have a freeze of in-state tuition. When you look at some of those things, you look at some of the healthcare areas that we were funding with the HHS budget, I think the services that Iowans deserve are well-funded, and the priorities that they staked out for us are taken care of.
Senator Bolcom, would you echo most of those sentiments, or do you differ?
Yeah, I would. Representative Winschuttle's hit on a number of the priorities of the legislature and in some of the investments we've made. You know, we balanced the budget, which we're required to do. It was a pretty status quo budget, if you will. We also were able to fund the REAP program for the first time at its at $25 million in its 25th year, a program that experiences widespread public support. I do think, though, in the area of education, while we did freeze tuition for a second year at our public universities and increase some early reading and teacher quality investments, I think we are failing our local schools right now. Across the state, school districts are in discussions about cutting millions and millions of dollars, including nurses and school counselors and teachers. And teachers' aides and programs like music and language from their offerings that will begin with the next school year. And it's a result of basically underfunding our schools over the last couple of years. And I think we're in really, really tough – our local schools are going to be in really, really tough shape going forward without more investment. I know Representative Winschuttle talked about the special thing that we do in Iowa by returning unused tax dollars to taxpayers. Well, I can tell you the schools need more support, not less, if we're going to have competitive kids in the future.
Robert in Cedar Falls wrote in that there were two big disappointments for him in this legislative session. He wrote that the House did not follow the law and set allowable growth for K through 12 schools. That is talking about the funding for the next school year. Representative Winschuttle, how would you respond to Robert about concern about not setting funds into the future for K-12 schools in the state?
Well, Robert, I appreciate your comments. If you're listening, please don't buy into the rhetoric that is being spewed out there by some folks. The funding for this next coming school year has already been set. The funding for FY14-15 school year, we set that last year, and we set it at an increase of 4% in supplemental state aid. Before that, we came back in and we refilled the pot that had been underfunded in a previous legislative session, not by House Republicans, but by the other party. I'm not going to try and make this too partisan here. We came back in, we filled that pot, we filled that gap. We came in, we put in 4% increase in the last school year, 4% increase in the 14-15 school year, and the rhetoric that's being thrown out there is that we haven't set the budget number for the school year 18 months out. Quite frankly, I don't know anybody that can look at the state budget right now and make a prediction of where we're going to be 18 months out. So therefore, it's not stable in fiscal budgeting practice to set that number so far out and make that commitment that we're not sure we're going to be able to fulfill on. And Senator Bolcom, I appreciate your comments, but at the same time, we're not underfunding education. We're funding education at a higher level than what we've ever done in the past, and we've made commitments that are sustainable and that school districts can go out and count on. They don't have to look at it as, gee, are we going to get another across-the-board cut like we saw under the previous administration? So I think we're doing the right things by education, and we are making the investment that Iowa school children deserve.
Senator Bolcom, he said that, you know, people can't make the prediction to look 18 months down the road. Do you feel that the state can? Do you feel like lawmakers can make that prediction?
Well, it's the law, and the Senate passed 6% allowable growth for the 15-16 session. We actually surveyed 300 or so superintendents, and we got back responses. 98% of them said they would like us to establish the funding level so they can plan right now in this legislative session that just ended. So we had a responsibility to do it. The Senate Democrats passed it, and we couldn't get support. You know, when Governor Branstad got elected in 2010, he came in and he proposed a two-year budget for our local schools with a zero increase in the first year and a zero increase in the second year. It's the first time in the history of the funding formula in the early 70s that we've seen anybody propose a zero increase for our schools. And what happened is we weren't able to get any money in the first year. It was zero, and then we got a 2% plus 2% in the second year, and that is catching up with us. We're about $1,500 behind the national average per student. We fell from 31st to 37th in school funding for our local schools, and it's unacceptable. And it's caught up with us, and we need to invest in our kids if they're going to be successful and our state's going to be prosperous.
I mentioned
Senator Bolcom.
Yeah, go ahead.
Senator Bolcom, we have made the investment in our students simply by saying that we haven't met some arbitrary number on some arbitrary chart on national funding. Does not mean we're shorting our children on education. I still believe Iowa has got one of the best education systems in the nation, and we are working to try and make sure that we are giving our students the tools they need to be successful. Look at the education reform package we passed last year. Look at the teacher leadership pathways we put in place. If that's not investing in our students, I don't know what is, Senator. So to say that just because we're $1,500 below per student on a national average, you can dump more money on this issue, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get a better education. It's about setting up the benchmarks and the guidelines, and we've been doing that. So I find it kind of arbitrary that we're saying simply because we're not making as much of a dollar investment in our students that they're not being prepared for the future that they're going to be successful in.
Senator Bolcom, would you like to respond to what Representative Winchell says?
Well, the law that the legislature passed said we should set allowable growth for the 15-16 school year. We've disregarded that. The legislature has. The Senate passed legislation, and the House Republicans failed to act. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it is important to have nurses in our schools. We're cutting them in Iowa City. It is important to have school counselors in the schools. We're cutting them. It's important to have qualified teachers, and you have to pay people to get qualified teachers. So it isn't always all about money, but there's no cheap way out of making sure our kids are ready for the 21st century.
Okay, let's stick with education here. Everyone seemed united on the idea that bullying is bad and that needs to be stopped, but lawmakers failed to agree on a bill to curb it. Senator Bolcom, did Senate Democrats sacrifice bullied kids by insisting on $1 million in funding, which you knew House Republicans wouldn't agree to?
Well, the Senate passed a strong bill. And by the way, back in 2007 when Democrats were in charge, we put in place a really strong bullying prevention effort in our schools, which still operates today. We need to make it even better. And I think the Senate passed a good, strong bill to address some of the concerns that we've heard from students around the state and teachers. There's going to be some investment required, and the Senate passed a bill. The House had a different view on it. But I think we feel comfortable in what the Senate moved forward, and it'll be some unfinished business we're going to have to get back after next session.
Representative Winchettle, is it appropriate for the state to approve a bill requiring schools to act without providing any funding for training their staffs?
Well, that's where you get into the politics of it and the rhetoric of it. The Department of Education in the negotiations was going to be required to provide training, and they were just going to have to find it out of the budget they have now. And granted, we don't know what the actual number would have been for training. But the House passed a bill that reflects the wishes of Iowans. It goes in to empower the school districts to do what they've already been mandated to do in 2007 to prevent bullying in their schools and to help those students out there that are undergoing this problem. So because it doesn't have $1 million of funding attached to it, it's kind of sad to say that we can't do it because it doesn't have more money thrown at the problem. What we need to be doing is empowering the local school districts, the local superintendents, to be able to address this problem in their own way, in their own fashion. What works in Iowa City is not necessarily going to work in West Harrison, okay, and that's where I'm from. So we need to let the local school districts make the decision and stop having government get involved in these decisions that need to be made on the local level. And if I may, I want to go back to the school funding issue. House Republicans did not fail to act. We sent over our own legislation to make sure that we were doing a budgeting process for school districts in an appropriate and fiscally sustainable manner. The Senate refused to take up that measure. And to say that we didn't act on 6% allowable growth because we didn't want to, 6% is not sustainable. If you look at the numbers and targets, there is no way that Iowa can sustain a 6% allowable growth number. That was put out there purely for politics.
Representative Winchettle, one follow-up there. So do you think that this should be empowering them to, on the topic of bullying, empowering them to act even when bullying takes place outside of school?
I think that decision needs to be made by the teacher, the superintendent, the principal, whoever is viewing that. Look, if I'm walking down the street and I'm seeing some kid pick on another kid, I don't care whose child it is. I'm going to try and find out who the parent of that child is, not only the person that's being bullied, but the person that is bullying, and notify both parents. I think that's my civil obligation as an adult. So if they need to be addressing it off the school grounds, I leave that decision in their hands. That should be up to their call on how they address that. Again, things are going to work differently across the state. Let them make the decision, and let's stop making the decision under the Golden Dome.
Senator Bolcom, one of the priorities from that Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl laid out in the beginning of the session was raising the minimum wage. It failed to win approval. Is it time to raise Iowa's minimum wage? Will it stand a better chance in a non-election year in your party's eyes?
Well, I think I'm fully our caucus is in full support of raising the minimum wage. It's time to do that again. This is especially important for moms and working single women. They're the folks that are going to get the greatest benefit out of an increase in the minimum wage. We didn't feel like we had bipartisan support to move that forward, and so we focused on other issues as the session went on. But Iowans, there's broad-based support for an increase in the minimum wage, and it'll be a big topic next session and a topic in the upcoming campaigns.
Representative Winchettle, what do you think of a hike in the minimum wage? Was that something that you were glad that didn't come up in your chamber, or is it something that you could see talks on next session?
I can't speculate on what happens next session, but let's ask a very simple question. Does raising the minimum wage create jobs, or does it kill jobs? Because when you've got small employers out there that have 5 and 6 people that are making above minimum wage, but not by much, and you go in and you saddle them with an additional burden of raising it to whatever number you want to say you want to put out there. Raise it from 725 to 1025. All that's going to do is drive jobs out of the marketplace. So that single mother out there that's trying to put food on the table for her kids, she's working that minimum wage job, she may in fact lose her job. For those folks that have fallen on hard times and the best they can get is flipping burgers out of McDonald's right now, and while they're trying to climb the ladder and get back up on their feet, it's going to drive their job out of the marketplace. Raising the minimum wage does not benefit the middle class. I think it actually inhibits them and it hurts them in the long run. You have to look at the big scheme of things here, and I don't think it's the right thing to do.
There's actually very flimsy evidence to support that jobs are lost. What we do know is that our economy is based on consumption, and when working people have more money in their hands to consume things like groceries and car repairs and pay their rent and buy some, go out for dinner, that's good for businesses on every main street across the state, and that's the economic benefit of an increase in the minimum wage. It's a job creator, more people spending money in the community. That's what creates jobs.
And quickly, before we go ahead, Representative Winchell, were you going to quickly respond there?
Yes, and Senator, I appreciate where you're coming from, but I've got a local employer here who has a seasonal business. It's a dairy den. And when we raised the minimum wage last time, he had to come out of his semi-retirement to work more hours because he could not hire the amount of high school staff that he needed to in order to staff his business full-time. He's still in that position today. We raise it again, he may not even have high school staff. Let's just put it that way. You're going to be driving jobs out of the marketplace. I'm sorry, that's just the facts of the matter.
All right, guys, I think it's starting to sound more and more like election season might be beginning here soon. But Senator Bolcom, I want to quickly ask you, next session, what's a priority for you next session?
Well, I think clearly we need to get back after making sure our local schools have the resources they need. And it's a failure at this point. This legislature and this governor, frankly, have not done nearly enough to fund our local schools. We'll be laying off all sorts of folks next fall that our kids are going to be depending on in our local schools. So I think that'll be a big issue. I'd like to come back and raise the minimum wage next year. I think there's a lot of interest in that. And we need to continue to work on conservation issues. There was a report yesterday about the loss of topsoil in Iowa. Our topsoil generates all our prosperity in this state. We need to do a better job of keeping it where it is.
And unfortunately, that's where we're going to have to wrap things up. Representative Winchell, Senator Bolcom, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you very much, Clay.
Thank you, Clay.
We'll be back in the second half to discuss more about the legislative session with Mike Weiser from Lee Enterprises and our very own IPR Statehouse correspondent, Joyce Russell. This is Iowa Public Radio News. You're listening to River to River. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Good afternoon. I'm Clay Masters. We're discussing the 2014 Iowa legislative session that adjourned last week. We spent the first half speaking with Democratic Senator Joe Bolcom and Republican Representative Matt Winchell. Lawmakers accomplished a few big issues this year, but as you could hear in the first half, there's plenty of fodder for the campaign trail and possibly the 2015 legislative session. We have a couple political reporters here to discuss the legislative session. Iowa Public Radio's very own Statehouse correspondent, Joyce Russell.
Hello,
welcome,
Clay,
to the show, Joyce. And Mike Weiser, writer for Lee Enterprises, writes for many papers around the state. Welcome back, Mike.
Thanks, Clay.
So we heard a little bit about what happened and the conversations that were taking place. It did kind of feel like campaign season is upon us already. What are the races that political reporters are really going to be following this right after we get off the air, maybe?
Well, there's a couple. And if we're sticking with the legislature right now, obviously the governor's race, Terry Branstad going for an unprecedented sixth term. He is facing presumptive nominee, and Branstad actually has a challenger, although Branstad is expected to win the primary handily. He faces presumptive nominee Senator Jack Hatch, a Democrat from Des Moines. That's a big race, but that's not going to be at the top of the ticket. The top of the ticket is the U.S. Senate race, where we see retiring Senator Tom Harkin, sort of one of the last prairie populists, I guess, so to speak, retiring from the U.S. Senate, Bruce Braley, a congressman from the 1st Congressional District, would like to replace him. And there are five Republicans who would also like to replace the senator.
One of them, Joni Ernst, the Republican senator. So there's already some other people that are in the legislature looking to run for higher office, Joyce.
That's right. Well, Joni Ernst hoping to win the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate, as we're describing. And then there are House members who are running for Congress. Anissa Katasevich from Waterloo?
Is she from Waterloo?
Pat Murphy from Dubuque, and Mark Lofgren, Republican, from somewhere in eastern
Muscatine.
Iowa. Muscatine. Okay, there we go. And actually, I was kind of surprised. I don't know about you, Mike, that Jack Hatch was very visible as a Democratic candidate for Senate. But I was surprised at how little this came up in the House with these three House members not drawing attention to the fact or not really even talking any more than they usually do.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting with particularly with Pat Murphy, who was a former Speaker of the House. He is leading right now in the polling that I've seen for that first congressional district nomination. And Anissa Katasevich from Waterloo, she's coming in second in the polling. And so you thought maybe there'd be a little more back and forth between them, but I think they kind of kept it low key, kept it down. Mark Lofgren, he doesn't have any competition in the House, so to speak. He's a Republican from Muscatine. He has two primary components. One is Dr. Marionette Miller Meeks, former head of the Department of Public Health. But he's always been kind of a quiet guy, kind of keep his nose down. And so we didn't hear a lot of campaigning from the floor from the House, although I do have to say Republicans have been accusing Senator Hatch of campaigning from the Senate floor, particularly with some of the issues on the Oversight Committee.
Yeah. In fact, the thing that came up today was Governor Branstad claiming that Senator Hatch is actually directing the Oversight Committee in their investigation.
And the Oversight Committee, of course, they're looking into this investigation of confidential settlements made to the laid-off workers in the Branstad administration.
Right, and other hiring and firing practices that they've expanded to.
And that's going to go on for, what, the rest of the year? Is that what it's seeming to look like?
Well, the last action of the legislature of the 85th General Assembly was in the Senate. The House had already adjourned. On Friday morning, the Senate passed a resolution saying that the Senate Oversight Committee will have the power to subpoena folks, and that power will run at least till December 31st. So that's the 86th General Assembly, the first year of the two-year 86th General Assembly, will start second week in January. So, yeah, it will run up right to the line.
There's such a razor-thin margin in the Iowa Senate. Could we see some changes taking place, and what would that do to the next General Assembly in 2015? If Democrats lose the majority, then you've got House, Senate, the governor's administration, all Republican. What could it do?
Well, if you just look at the kinds of things that the Republican-controlled House has passed in the last couple of years— that might be a preview of what some abortion legislation, gun legislation, that might be a preview of what we would actually see enacted into law if they win what they call the trifecta, House, Senate, and governorship.
And I think, Iowa is strange, and I can't remember the number right off the top of my head, but it's actually uncommon across state houses to have a split legislature. I think there's only maybe eight or nine, in addition to Iowa, where you have one party in control in one and one party in control in another, and, the governorship. It's more common if you look at Illinois. It's all Democrats. If you look at our neighbors to the to the west, Nebraska is, I believe, it's all Republican. I think down in Missouri, you have a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a Democratic governor. And so Iowa is one of the few that has this arrangement.
And I saw a graphic in the Wall Street Journal this morning about this very subject, about how many state legislatures could flip in the fall elections. And it had a little graphic showing how many seats are at stake. And Iowa's was, the very narrowest. There is one seat at stake that could throw the difference.
And I would just have to say, being a Nebraskan, it's a unicameral and it's technically nonpartisan.
Oh,
so, So what will this session be remembered for? I mean, how can we sum this up in, let's say, five words or less? Who wants to tackle that?
I'll just mention a couple of things that I'm sure we'll continue to hear about, and that's the medical marijuana bill, very limited medical marijuana bill for children, not just children, but patients with epilepsy. And I think that the passing enough money, approving enough money to freeze tuition, I think that that's something that both sides are going to be praising themselves for.
Yeah, I agree, though. That's definitely the takeaway of this. You have to remember this legislative session the 85th General Assembly is actually 2 years long. And so some of the big landmarks of the 85th is going to be education reform, which they did
everything
last
that
year.
Happened in 13.
Everything that happened, right? The property tax and all that other stuff. And that's going to give, you know, we were talking about politics, that's going to give those who are up for election some big ticket items to talk about. I do think that this, you know, we knew right off the bat, right after the governor's condition of the state speech, that this was a more modest agenda for the state in this second half of the session. Some of the big items that didn't happen, anti-bullying didn't happen. We heard the senator and representative talk about that just last half hour. Broadband expansion did not happen. That might come back up. I believe it's going to come back up. It was a big issue for the governor to get that going through. And really, of the governor's agenda, we did pass some tax benefits for veterans to relocate to the state. And they did pass a legislation that would allow old school buildings or government buildings to be to get tax credits to help refurbish these buildings to make them to a use.
And Mike, you mentioned the 2 year General Assembly, mm-hmm. all of the big things that they did last year. Speaker Paulson, when he was asked to kind of summarize things, he said, "I think this is going to go down as one of the most impressive General Assemblies ever." And then it was like the other shoe dropped. He said, "I'm talking about the 2 years now."
Right, 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 right. Yeah, I think you do have to include that in terms of some of the size of the issues and the work product that was put out. There's no denying that. And if you remember, about a year ago at this time, there were a lot of the lawmakers, Democrats and Republicans, were sort of appearing together, saying, "This is the difference between us and Washington." Yeah. And then this time around, as you heard from the folks who were just on. They're a little more partisan now on some of these other issues, saying, and it's going to give them plenty of fodder to say, on the campaign trail, they can say, "Look, we accomplished these things, but you still need to elect Democrats or Republicans, whatever, you know, whoever you're speaking to, because we have to do something on minimum wage or not do something on minimum, or we have to do something on road tax." So there are some issues that they're going to have to settle up.
So why? I mean, it seemed like everybody could agree we need to do something to cut back on bullying, bully prevention. It was talked about last year. It was talked about this year. Yet nothing got done. Joyce, I feel like we have the same conversation every week when we do our conversation during Morning Edition. But what's the deal? Why couldn't this get anywhere?
Well, Mike, you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think that the sticking point was this question of immunity for school officials. Mm-hmm. From the very beginning of the discussion, Republicans in the House started talking about giving school officials immunity in the event of these really tragic cases that happen. The law says you're required to report any bullying to parents, your certain things that you have to do. And school officials were very nervous about that. If something goes very wrong, a child commits suicide, then the onus might be on them. And I think that's what brought the bullying bill down, isn't it?
Yeah, that and there was the other piece too that went hand in hand with that. This is the second year in a row that the governor has had a anti-bullying bill that were followed up by these statewide anti-bullying summits. And we talked to him about that this morning. He says he's not sure if he's going to have a third, but he's not ruling it out. There were two issues. One was the immunity. Another one was this idea of being able to enforce anti-bullying policy off school grounds, right? The governor in his condition of the state speech, said, bullying is 24/7. It's on Facebook. It's on, and as long as it affects the learning environment, we should be able to go after that. So if you could make a complaint that, you know, I'm being picked on and I don't want to go to school because I'm being picked on, that's a case of bullying. When it all came down and when it all came together, the House struck that provision of the bill. And they kept the part about school immunity. It went back over to the Senate. I remember speaking to Senator Rob Hoag, who said, you know, unless it has, he goes, you know, we're not too sure about the immunity, but we definitely do want this off-school grounds piece in there. And they're not willing to do it. Time's running out. It's not coming up.
Yeah, and I actually heard people saying by giving the school officials immunity, you're actually weakening. We already have an anti-bullying statute. Mm-hmm. It didn't have immunity in here. So this, you know, the Republicans' bill would have not expanded it to include off-site, which the governor wanted, but it would give them immunity for what they're already doing. And so, exactly. You know, some people said you're weakening the law, not strengthening it.
The other surprising maybe failure was the Rural Broadband Initiative to expand Internet access, the Connect Every Iowan Act. Well, every Iowan's not going to get connected. Why is that?
Well, one of the sticking points throughout, and I thought this was going to bring the bill down, and that was the cell phone companies got involved in this and lobbied very, very hard to create some new rules that would make it easier for cell phones to get sited and give local governments less control, less ability to say, no, we don't want a cell phone tower there. And I thought that was what was going to bring the bill down. But they brought the bill up in the House, as you know, Mike. And the first thing they did was take that controversial part out. So I thought, oh, okay, now we're smooth sailing. And then, as you know, a number of Republicans voted against the governor's bill. Only one Democrat voted for it. That brought the bill down. The Republicans said, Democrats, you promised you would give us some votes. The Democrats say, no, we didn't. and there we are. The bill is gone, dead.
In 2013, it felt like we were hearing a lot about the gas tax. Even Governor Branstad was out talking during the Transportation Day with lobbyists from the Farm Bureau and transportation organizations, calling it a user fee. So he didn't even have to call it a tax. You know, you're using a car, so you're paying for it. What happened with the gas tax this year, Mike?
Well, you know, this is another one of those things that goes over two sessions. Really what you had previous to the 85th General Assembly even getting in office, the governor had put together, well, there was this group that was put together a blue ribbon panel to make recommendations. And what they did, they said, well, you should have a fuel tax increase about 8 to 10 cents per gallon. You should raise some user fees on, I think there was like some licensing fees and stuff like this, right? And so that recommendation is coming in right before the 2013 session. And as we had alluded to before, 2013 was real busy. We had property tax, we had education and all this other stuff. And so there was this idea that sort of the agreement was, well, we'll talk about fuel tax when we're done with property tax.
Right.
Because the word was down that, you know, if we can cut the property tax and raise the fuel tax, you know, it's kind of a wash and that'll be good. At the end of session, it didn't come up. Bill never got read on the floor. So this session, we come around, and I do want to back up. Over this interim, we had Paul Trombino, director of the Iowa Department of Transportation. He's maybe feeling out there, or the governor's folks are feeling out there, that there's not too much support for this gas tax. Polls are showing that. Trombino comes up with 9 alternatives, and they range from, you know, maybe farmers will have to pay for their red dye, and, you know, maybe we'll raise these fees as – none of those got picked up in the legislature this year. The fuel tax was you have Josh Burns in the House, who Republican from Osage, head of the Transportation Committee, very interested in pushing this. He tried to get a coalition going. You had some folks in the Senate, mostly rural Republicans, who are looking at some of these roads and bridges where they try to get their this heavy machinery over. They made this little coalition. But in the end, they didn't have enough votes. It ended up being an amendment to an ethanol bill, and it was ruled not germane, and that was the story of the gas tax.
And Representative Josh Burns, who Mike just referred to, he, a Republican from Osage, he's one of the people who's been out there the most, and he sits right in front of us there at the press bench, so we kind of get a bird's eye view of what's going on with the gas tax, and that is one unhappy and frustrated lawmaker. But I guess he'll try again next year.
It was definitely you could see how the gas tax was doing based on his scowl in the morning.
Another thing that surprised me is, I'm looking back over my notes of the original session River to River, and we had Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstall on the topic of the environment said, I would like to see significant commitment to water quality this year. And I felt like I didn't hear much about environmental issues. And then all of a sudden, when I was talking with you this morning, Joyce, REAP funding. And so there is some environmental work being done that, for me, kind of came out of the blue.
Well, the water quality, even apart from the Resource Enhancement and Protection Program, the budget did include some water quality initiatives. And then the Resource Enhancement and Protection Program, known as REAP, they sort of became kind of a sentimental favorite because they're it's their 25th anniversary.
Okay.
They're supposed to be funded. They were supposed to get $20 million every year. Only a handful of years did that even happen. So it was really kind of, some people thought, an overreach to ask for 25, but they got $15 million in one bill, $5 million in another, and then at the very last minute they got their $5 million, so their $25 million. And it is a popular program with both parties.
So how do you feel when you look at what each party has accomplished this legislative session? What can they take out onto the campaign trail and tout as accomplishments? I think of, last year with the Medicaid expansion or the alternative to Medicaid expansion, you had Republicans able to say that, look, we didn't expand Medicaid, we had our alternative. You had Democrats being able to say, we expanded Medicaid. I mean, that's Iowa politics for you, right? Like, everybody being nice about what they accomplished. What got done this year that they can take to the campaign trail? Mike?
Well, I think the campaign trail, a lot of the focus is going to be on last year, on what they did, what they got done last year. And this year was very incremental in terms of, granted, Senator Bolcom had talked about this was the year of the mother, right? Because you had this group. I mean, I think that was really the big story that we had all followed or take our time. If you had mentioned you were looking at your notes, I didn't have medical marijuana or cannabis legalization at all on my things to watch for going into this year. We were looking at fuel tax. We were looking at some of the governor's initiatives. By the end of, by the time that we adjourned Friday and then the House adjourns Thursday morning, that was the big story of that night and probably this session on that lobbying effort that happened. Will lawmakers want to go out on the campaign trail and necessarily say that this was my big accomplishment? I don't think so. I mean, I think they're gonna hearken back to 2013 and talk about property taxes and education.
And I think both parties can talk about the tuition freeze, mm-hmm. and that should be a popular issue for both of them. For something that I'm sure Republicans will be talking about is not spending Iowa's surpluses. They did bring in a bill at the last minute that brought this year's ending balance down by some $80 million, but they left the rest of it intact. And I think Republicans especially will be campaigning on that.
So was there anything else that surprised you this legislative session?
I got surprised at the end, and I talked about this morning with that disease transmission bill, because this is the bill to update Iowa's HIV transmission laws, and it passed the Senate unanimously, and then there was internal conflict in the Republican caucus in the House that kept that from moving, and I thought it was dying, and then in the middle of the night it rose from the dead, and they worked out their differences, and that's now on its way to the governor.
Mike, quickly, any other surprises out there?
I would have to say, as far as surprise, I'm surprised that more of the governor's agenda didn't get done. If you look at the four that he had announced, he got about 50%, 2 out of 4. Speaking to, he was talking to our colleague James Lynch last week, and he said, actually, I didn't have 4 things, I had 7 things, and I got 5 out of 7. And so he added some other things that I don't think we were necessarily talking about, but he he's counting it as a success. I was surprised that fuel tax didn't have more legs, but that was, you know, you never know what's going to happen when you're coming in.
Okay. Mike Weiser from Lee Enterprises, Joyce Russell, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Okay.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from John Pimble. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River are available at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Thank you.